Our meeting format calls for a guest speaker followed by open discussion. Our guest speaker will share for 30 to 45 minutes before calling on people to share. It is now my pleasure to introduce Anne from Exeter. She's just celebrated 1 year sober.
Thank you. I'm Anne. I'm an alcoholic. And yes, I just celebrated 1 year on February 3rd. Thank you. I've had 1 year before. I've had 2 years before. I've had 2.5 years before. The last 18 years has been a lot of relapse for me. But I guess I'll start with what it starts with, I guess, what it's like. I'm a little nervous, so bear with me. So I was raised by a mother with alcoholism, drug addiction, stepfather, raging alcoholic, and I know it's common, but it was very difficult. And I remember as a child thinking, I will never drink. I remember looking at that stuff, looking at the way they acted, and I think every day. And my stepdad also smoked, and I remember I thought both those things were horrible. I never do it, but I did both. I was in a rough home. I grew up with a lot of violence. The sheriff was called once a week. Once every other week. It was scary. My stepfather would beat up my mother, break her arm, pull out wads of hair. He only would act like he was going to hurt my sister and I. My sister is 3 years younger than me. He would only act like he was going to hurt us if we tried to call the sheriff. So we'd sneak and call the sheriff sometimes. But it's that feeling of you don't know what you can expect. You can't expect anything because you don't know what's going to happen. It's out of your control. And I never really felt a lot of safety, a lot of comfort, or like I had anyone I could go to. I've talked to my sister, and she, of course, feels the same way. She's not an alcoholic. She's not one of us. But my stepfather, he was a pharmacist, and I remember he used to get pure cocaine back in the day in the pharmacy. Wow. Yeah, so he would do both. And that's the other thing, you know, I remember thinking, drugs are not a part of my story, but I remember thinking, that is just so weird. But so the lifestyle was crazy. They'd have parties, all kinds of parties. Strange people, men all around, and I'm in junior high and high school. Very, very strange. So I grew up, and I was a goody-goody because I was going to do the opposite. Straight A's. I was going to go to college. I did go to college when I graduated. I graduated from Exeter High School, went to San Diego State for a year, almost a year. Didn't quite finish the year. And my boyfriend back at home gave me an ultimatum, come home or else. And I was insecure. I'm a people pleaser. I just want to make everyone happy around me. And the thought of losing him, even though I was only 18 and so young, I quit and I went home. I got married when I was 19 to that guy, my high school boyfriend. And I thought, you know what I could do? I could do something really cool. I could be such a different parent than my parents. I'm going to have 3 babies. Boom, boom, boom. And I did. And I loved it. I did not drink. I didn't drink through high school, college. I had 3 babies. What I never dealt with was trauma. I never dealt with my insecurities, my people pleasing. I still always had that. I raised my kids in a way that I cared what everybody thought. Like my kids were a reflection of me because I was so insecure. They're lovely people. They turned out wonderfully. But sometimes I wonder how. But So I was married. That marriage lasted 20 years. In 2000, so it was 2002, we started getting divorced, and I moved out with the kids, bought a house in Exeter so they could finish school. By then they were teenagers. My oldest was 17, my middle was 14, and my youngest was 11. And in 2003, when my divorce, same time my divorce was being finalized, my son was about to graduate from high school, my oldest. And in April, it was Senior Ditch Day. And I know this seems trivial, but it has a lot of importance. I remember him coming. I remember this day so vividly. And he came and asked, "Can I go?" And I thought, this kid has straight A's. He's ready to go to college. How can I say no? He's going to go up to Three Rivers with all his buddies, up to a little Slicky, I guess it's called. So, Slick Rock. There you go. Yeah, Slick Rock. And so, I was sitting there in my new house and newly divorced, and I was ready to take on the world. And I thought, oh, I'm such a good parent. He's such a good kid. Sure, go ahead. And my son had a car, but he didn't drive that day. One of his friends drove up. And secretly, I remember thinking, oh, thank God he's not driving, because what if they drink? Oh, he's safe from a DUI or, something happening. I don't know. I just thought, oh, good, he's not going to drink. Well, he left, and later that day, I was meeting with my soon-to-be ex-husband. We were signing divorce papers at a restaurant in Exeter. And my other two kids were home, and we're sitting there signing those papers, and in walk my other two kids with one of my oldest good friends. And I'm thinking, what the heck? And they told us that Travis had been in an accident up at Horse Creek Bridge, up at the turn coming down. And so we drove up there. What had happened is he got in the car with someone who was drinking heavily. And this kid who was driving, he'd already had two DUIs within a year. And they flipped, and my son landed on a boulder. And they flew him to Fresno, and he lived in the hospital. Well, he was never awake, but they kept him alive for a week. And we let him go. We were told that there was no hope. And it's weird how, because I wasn't drinking then. It wasn't something I relied on. And at the time, it's like you go into this auto mode. You know you have to take care of, you got two other kids, you got family at the hospital. It was a crazy time. It was the weirdest experience, just weird. You don't expect something like that to happen. And so the first time I drank, I remember this vividly. Not the first time I drank in my life, but the first time I remember drinking for a purpose was we were driving home from Fresno, where he was in the hospital, and we were driving to Exeter. And I remember, like, all the little dashboard in the car. I remember thinking, I can't stand the way this feels. I am going home and buying some vodka. I don't know why. I guess it's my stepdad flashed in my head. I don't know. I just thought, this is what people do when they can't handle life. I come from a long line of alcoholics. My grandmother had 40 years sober in AA. And so I don't know. To me, it just seemed natural. And I got home that day, I made an excuse to get in the car, and I drove and I got some vodka. And I had people over, I had my son's friends, the school, because he was a high school senior, he had friends over, and I didn't care. I took that bottle in my closet, and I guzzled by myself, and it was the best feeling in the world. I thought, I found something that is going to help me through this, and this is amazing. And so it just started. Like, it was, I believe I've been an alcoholic my whole life, just in my behaviors, the way I feel, the craziness, my thoughts. But I guess I hadn't been, there wasn't something in my life that gave me the urge to feel different. And that's why I drink. I drink to feel different. I don't care if it makes me feel worse. I don't care if it makes me feel weird or stupid or sleepy or passed out or blackout. I just want to feel different. I don't want to feel these feelings. So I drank hard, and I can't believe I didn't get a DUI, but I drank hard for 2 years. And I remember when I in February of 2005, I decided to get sober. And I had watched my grandmother get sober, so I knew I could do it. And I went to meetings here in Visalia. But what I didn't expect was when I put the bottle down, I had no idea what withdrawal was. I had no idea the hallucinations, the shakes, the vomiting. It was horrific. And I didn't go to a meeting until I was a week sober because I was sick. I was just laid up sick. I didn't even think of rehab because I had two kids at home. So I got sober, and I got 2.5 years. And I guess as I look back at my relapses, I think I commit myself to this program for a while, but I have to admit that I pull away. I know that I do. I don't want to be an alcoholic. I don't want to be an AA sometimes. You know, I don't want to give up all this time. I don't want to talk in front of people. I don't want to share. I don't want to, you know, read. I don't want to do these steps, you know, for so long. I've done a couple 4 steps in other years, but, you know, I don't know, probably half-assed them and just did them. And not this time. I'm doing a better job this time. But, so that was my first sobriety. And even in sobriety, when I first got sober in 2005, I start going to meetings, and within 2 weeks, I start dating someone. You know, my sponsor's like, no, maybe you should not do that. And, oh, wait, maybe? So it's a suggestion? Okay. Well, nah, he's so cute, and he rides this really fast motorcycle, and it's so cool. So, yeah. So that was interesting. But so really, I have to say, I wasn't that committed. So I did relapse and got sober again. And really, it's hard to remember all the relapses. I would say there were probably 5 in the last 18 years, 5, 6 maybe. And so when my youngest went to college in 2010, I was living by myself in Exeter. And at that time, I don't think I was sober, but I was so uncomfortable being alone. I didn't know what to do with myself. And so I moved, I rented my house out, and I moved down to L.A. so I could be closer to where my daughter was going to college. And she hated that idea. She was pissed off. You know, the one thing she wanted was away from her alcoholic mother. And so I moved down there, moved in with a family member, and I went crazy down in L.A. Then I just drank and drove all over, and I don't know how I'm alive. I don't know how I didn't hurt someone else. I don't know how I didn't end up in jail. I mean, blackouts are definitely a part of my story in all of that. Driving, getting home, and going and checking the car. You know, oh, my God, is the car okay? It was just crazy. So, yeah, so, and then, I mean, just stupid stuff. So at one point, I had no place to live because I had renters in my house and they had a lease, and I was down in L.A. and I had gotten drunk in my aunt's house that I was living in, and she's an AA. And the one thing she told me is, no drinking. Well, I did bad. She called the cops on me. Oh, I guess I did end up in 5150 there that time because she thought I was trying to kill myself. Because I was very depressed. I hadn't dealt with my trauma. I hadn't dealt with myself, really. And so, yeah, that was interesting down in L.A. Ooh, that was an interesting place to be in a mental hospital for a little bit. But, so, from there, I thought, where am I going to go? My daughter doesn't really want me down here anymore. She didn't want me in the first place, but she doesn't want me down here anymore. Can't move into my house. So I called an old boyfriend, and he lived up in Washington, and I said, hey, I have no place to go. He said, come on up if you'll marry me. And I was like, sure, I'll marry you. And so I went up there, and I started a life. And within a few months, I realized, I can't marry this guy. I've got to get sober. This is crazy. You know, what am I doing? I had enough sobriety previously to know this doesn't make sense. I'm going to get myself into another bad position. And I just keep bopping from either guys or places to live because I don't have my shit together. And so I left him. I got an apartment, got a job, and got sober. And I got sober in 2014. Yes, the beginning of 2014. And I worked a good, solid program. Had a great sponsor up there. And then I met another guy the end of 14. That guy is my husband right now. Okay. So I was sober when I got married. Stayed sober for a couple more years. We moved back here to Exeter. And because I wanted to be closer to my kids and my grandkids. And so we've been living back here since 2016. But it was, I think 2017 was when I relapsed. 17 or 18. It's hard to remember now. But so I relapsed. And I remember calling the suicide hotline. And I just couldn't bear the pain anymore of not dealing with the trauma from my childhood, the trauma from losing my son. You know, why I never thought, oh, get some help for this, or do, you know, talk to somebody, or, you know, work the steps appropriately instead of half-ass and looking for another guy. I finally went to treatment the first time in the beginning of 2019. I went to treatment. And I was there for 3 months. And it was down in L.A. And it was a great program. But it was a great program. But I didn't stay sober long. I did relapse after a few months. And still my fault. I started going to meetings here. I started meeting people. And I didn't want to do it again. I keep thinking, yeah, I don't know, I have a problem, but A doesn't work for me. You know, all the excuses. Am I really an alcoholic? And then I've been to treatment in the last 3 years, four times, I think. Just, I'd get out, relapse, go again, get out and relapse. So I went back to the treatment center last year. I guess it was the 2nd of February, 2022. And I was broken. I was broken enough to really, really surrender and try to connect with a God of my understanding that I have been connected to previously in my life. But I was resistant. I thought he hated me. I thought I've done so many things, so many terrible things. And I thought that because I let my son go that day, that I held responsibility for what happened. That I felt like people in Exeter, in my community, looked at me, well, if she hadn't let her son go up, you know, and because I worry so much about what people think about me. I'm learning not to. That is definitely part of what I'm working on. I think towards the end of my four step, a very thorough one that's taken me a long time. And the difference this time is I'm willing, I'm desperate, I'm open, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to relapse any longer. I want to be in AA. I want to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know that I've ever said that before. I've had the same sponsor for a little bit, and I think sometimes she's surprised at how willing I am this time. It is different. And also, the difference is when I sit down to write, I pray first. I never did that before. I just kind of did it to get it done. Oh, God, yeah, you know, write it. Yeah. Don't feel, just write, like, you know, protecting myself. What if I get into those feelings? What if I cry? What if I, oh, no, what's going to happen to me if I have those feelings again? But it's been so different. It's been such a spiritual experience to write. It's been, sometimes, even when I'm not writing, maybe this has happened to other people, but things pop in my head. Oh, and I have to go find my notebook and write it down, because things will come to me because I'm open and I'm willing. And I am reading the book with my sponsor. And I go to meetings. I am of service now. I have a service commitment, which I haven't done that ever, maybe, ever in all my sobrieties. I've never taken a service commitment, other than maybe greeter one time. But I've never been secretary of a meeting. So that's been a huge blessing. And it's been awesome to be responsible for being there and for people knowing I'm supposed to be there. You know, on Mondays, if Ann's not there, why? You know, what's going on? And so getting connected with people, being open. I'm not very open, and it's COVID was wonderful because I could just isolate. I loved it, you know. I didn't have to talk to anybody, be around anybody. But I really love this. This is new. This is a new life for me, and I'm so excited. I can't believe I have a year. It's been so hard the last 3-4 years to try and get any time at all. And this time doesn't feel like a burden. It doesn't feel like it's hard. It feels good, if that makes sense. It feels good. And another thing that I'm doing different this time is I'm doing 1 to 2 meetings a day, even if they're on Zoom. I haven't gotten to a lot of in-person meetings, but I at least go there and most of the time show my face on camera. So, I'm so grateful to be here. And I don't know how long I talked, but anyway, thank you for listening, and thank you for letting me be of service.
Thanks, Kelly, I'm an alcoholic. Before we open it up for discussion, Ann has agreed to answer some few recovery-related questions. If anybody has any questions for her, now's the time.
Do you want her to repeat the question?
I have a question.
Hi, my name is Valerie.
Do you sponsor women? Do you sponsor other women?
Do I sponsor other women? Not yet.
Okay, my next question then would be, for those women who want to get a sponsor, can you suggest to them how to get one? How did you get your sponsor?
Okay, the question is, how did I get my sponsor?
Mm-hmm.
When I was going to meetings in 2019, I went to a women's meeting, a Tuesday night women's meeting, and there was a woman that I remember watching her. I remember watching her spirit and the way she interacted with people and how I loved her shares, and I wanted what she has. And I don't remember how I got her number, if I asked someone or how that worked, but I just called her out of the blue and said, maybe you don't know me, but I'd love you to sponsor me.
That's right.
So,
thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Is that lady still my sponsor today? Yes, she is.
The other question is you didn't talk too much about getting involved with your sponsor. I asked you a lot through this. On your third step, if you had like that burning bush experience, and like you know, when you're going through the third step prayer with your sponsor.
My third step, did I go through a burning bush experience?
With the third step prayer.
Yeah, with the third step prayer. You mean, did I feel a big spiritual experience at that time? I would have to say no. I think it's gradual. For me, it's been gradual. For me, it's been... the spiritual experience happens with my change in attitude, my change in my life. It's more of a, it feels like it's more gradual. I don't know that I've, and other people seem to notice more than I feel like this huge spiritual experience.
And my other question is, how do you do your meditation for the day?
How do I do meditation? I have a couple books that I read. Some are A approved, some not. And so in the morning, I hit my knees and I ask for willingness and I surrender to my God. And that's the way I get my day started. And when I miss it, I can tell.
And also, too, is with your higher power, I mean, besides the meditation, how else do you stay in praying and you stay in constant contact with
him? How do I stay in constant contact with my higher power? I really just try to be mindful all day, especially if I'm going to make a phone call or I'm going to do some writing or, you know, if I start to feel anger or I start to feel uncomfortable, I try to stop and just say a prayer. So it's a conscious contact. I consciously make a decision to be in contact with my higher power.
Is that your sister?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that's
your
sponsor.
Oh, that's your
sponsor?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my sponsor.
What do you do to stay spiritually fit?
What do I do to stay spiritually fit? Well, for me... My church is a big part of my spirituality. So I do attend a church. If I can't attend or don't attend, we watch on Zoom. I think just that and making the time is how I stay spiritually, you know, fit. It's when I get all caught up in my own life and I don't stop to do that is when I get crazy. Yeah. Go ahead.
Was it hard for you to become open and honest about your allergy?
Was it hard for me to be open and honest about my allergy? With who? Like, absolutely. I mean, I felt like I took it, you know, even the first time I got sober, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, but I didn't accept it. That's why I kept relapsing. I didn't accept it. I would even see commercials or movies and they'd just drink casually and like, I know I can do that. I just got to try and do it better, you know? So yeah, very, very hard to realize that I have an allergy and I absolutely, it's going to kill me. You know, just like someone who has an allergy to shellfish, eventually they're going to die if they keep eating it. And so same thing's going to happen to me. Definitely. I'm shocked I'm now alive, but yeah. There was a hand back there. What does it mean to me when it talks about having a newfound freedom? That is a good question. Yikes. Newfound freedom. Well, you know what? the freedom is, one of the freedoms is I can wake up every morning and not feel like I want to die, or not feel like I'm not good enough. Nobody likes me. I just keep messing up. The freedom is I may not wake up happy. I may not wake up skipping. But, you know, I wake up and I just do the next indicated thing. I take it very seriously so that I do have more freedom to live. You know, and I'm free to be a grandma. I mean, I'm so blessed. I'm so grateful now. And they don't ever have to see me. I never drank around them. You know, my daughter had said many times, if you drink, you're not going to see the kids. And so I have a lot of freedoms in my life that I value, that I'm so blessed to have. Go ahead.
Do you still have cravings?
Do I still have cravings?
Yes.
That wasn't me. I didn't say that. But you know what's funny is I don't have cravings, but what I do have that's weird is the liquor store kind of near my house. Sometimes I'll drive by there and I get this weird pull, you know, like, but it's quick. It's fast, and I can just pray or snap right out of it, you know. But a craving like when I feel uncomfortable, no. And I've gone through some stuff in my marriage that has been really uncomfortable lately. Probably having to do with me being sober now, but I don't, that's not my first thought. My first thought is call my sponsor, pray, you know, do something different. Yeah. Go ahead.
I had a question. How big of a role do your children or like your SO play in your sobriety? Like, do they support you? Like, or they just kind of stand back and just let you do it on your own?
My daughter definitely supports me. My son definitely supports me because they watched me. Mm-hmm. You know, they saw, they were scared. My son, he likes to drink. So I don't know if he's one of us. I don't care right now. I just put him in God's hands. But they're both very, very supportive. My whole family's supportive. I mean, if I were to show up drunk, who knows? They would all capture me and take me to treatment again. So they're very supportive.
Good.
Back there?
Yeah, you talked about getting some places not wanting to be around meetings. I'm like that too.
So when I get complacent, how do I snap out of that? How do I snap out of complacency? Wanting to isolate. That's, you know, I still struggle with that. I'm not working right now. So making myself do things, making myself get together with my sponsor and sister sponsees when, you know, my other sponsee sister, sorry. When they get together, I did that a couple weeks ago. It's also connecting with people, calling my sponsor all the time. You know, I tell her, I'm home, I don't feel good, or I, you know, all the excuses that people have. And so that I have, I shouldn't say people, that I have, I'll call her and I'll say it so that she can, you know, she doesn't say get your ass out of the house, but she'll gently, she definitely helps me through it. So, but I just, there is a lot of fear. I don't want to relapse again, and that motivates me. It definitely motivates me to get into writing, praying, calling women, you know, doing something that I don't want to do, but I know it's going to keep me sober. I don't always want to do it, but it helps. Calling, especially, it's a good thing.
What kind of writing are you doing? Are you writing about things that have happened in the past? Or are you feeling now, or daily journal?
what kind of riding am I doing? I'm finishing up my four step, I guess. I've been doing a lot of that. I also, you know, when there's feelings and I don't know what to do with them, I just do free riding. I just kind of to get it out, get it on paper, and then I read it later and go, that sounds ridiculous. But, you know, because then usually after I write it, I either feel a little different or a little better. So I do both.
Do you keep track of all those or you throw them away? You have them in
a... You know, I kept them for a long time because I started doing that when I went to treatment this last time. And I've done it periodically, too, throughout my sobrieties and grateful list, whatever, gratitude list. But I recently threw them all out. I kind of had a ceremony with myself because I thought, you know, I don't want someone getting a hold of this someday, you know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, just back there.
I just want to know, have you had a spiritual awakening leading to a complete character change? If so, how did that happen?
You guys and your questions. Wow, tough group. Have I had a
spiritual awakening leading
to a complete character change? I don't. Yes, I guess I have. I'm here. I've never done this before in person. I've never done this before. So if I were asked before, I would say no. So that is very different. I'm willing.
Okay. Well, I'm in inpatient treatment and. So what I'm wondering is, because I'm just trying to get ideas, because I'm reading in the book and it says alcoholics helping another alcoholic is how you can stay sober, you know. What do you do to help another alcoholic?
Good question. What do I do to help another alcoholic? Right now I just think it's being in service. I really want to get enough of a foundation before I sponsor, you know, of course, sponsor women. But I mean, when I have gone to meetings, I remember like in Washington when I lived up there, if someone was new in the meeting, going up to them, talking to them, inviting them to sit by me, you know, just little things. It doesn't have to be sponsoring right now. So I would say I'm a lot focused on myself, but I try to share in meetings. Yeah, I definitely try to share in meetings. I've been doing a lot of that lately, and that was something I would avoid like the plague. I just didn't want to. I didn't like that. I didn't like being open. I didn't like being nervous. So a lot of sharing.
I think you're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
What is the relationship like with you and your sponsor outside of AA? What do you guys do as recreational things to stay busy?
What is my relationship with my sponsor outside of AA?
And yeah, what is it that you do recreational wise to entertain yourself? Do you go to golf? Do you go to pool? Or?
Actually, we don't. I live in Exeter and she lives in Hanford, so we haven't done a lot out of AA. We get together when we are celebrating something, but not really anything out of AA.
Do you sponsor guys or just women?
Excuse me?
Do you sponsor guys or just women?
Is my sponsor a guy?
Do you sponsor men or women?
Oh, do I sponsor men or women? I don't sponsor anyone, and I'm not through my fourth step yet, and I think that's essential. Before I do that, it's okay.
Are you part of the 12-step workshop that they do in Denver?
No. Is there one in Exeter?
No. Like you tell people that have been sponsored by people that attend that by the language that they use and maybe you're sponsored by that or something like that.
Oh. Nope.
what is your main goal that you use when you are around people that can drink?
No. Oh, good question. What is my main tool when I'm around people that drink? You know, I'm not the only person that I'm around that drinks is my son, and I want to be a good example. I want to show him what alcoholics, you know, what being an Alcoholics Anonymous is like. I believe me, I don't get the urge. It's not, you know, I don't get a craving or anything, and I'm really just not around a lot of people. I don't go out a lot, so yeah, it's not much of an issue for me.
Does anybody online have any questions for our speaker?
Okay, that's good.
Okay, no.
Okay. We got one more over here. Does your son drink around you?
Does my son drink around me? He does. He does. Not, you know, he doesn't get crazy around me, but yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.